Welcome back to the Villain Edit. I am Monty Ashley.
I am Rias Hall.
That's amazing.
Yes, it is.
Hello, Rias.
Hi, Monty.
How are you doing?
Oh, I'm pretty good. You know, it's the situation in Seattle is hot and smoky.
Yeah, but not like a cool kind of hot smoky, like a sausage or a burlesque dancer.
I don't know. I went out and got some smoked salmon sushi for lunch.
And it was
smoked by the time I got it home. Salmon's delicious.
That's pretty good. I'm sorry I stepped on your joke there. I'm told I should stop doing that.
Yes. That's okay. I know how you love stepping on my stuff.
I only step on your dog, and that is because she is small and wishes to be as close to my feet as possible. I think she does it on purpose to get attention. I am victim blaming your dog.
Well, look what she's wearing.
She's wearing too much. It is so hot and smoky.
It is. It's miserably hot, and we can't open the windows because then we can't breathe because Canadian forest fires.
When we take the dog for a walk, I am wearing a full filtration mask situation. I feel like one of the Fremen.
Well, you look more like Bane. Big and muscular.
Thanks! This is an audio context, so
exactly.
People will take that absolutely literally.
Yes.
So, I've been watching some television. Have you also been watching some television?
I have, much of it from the same couch as you.
Yes. I want to briefly discuss the Great Food Truck Race.
Okay.
How great would you say it is?
It's not so great.
Like, are we grading it on a curve? Like, among food truck races, it is great?
I don't know. They've been driving through the desert a lot, so I'd say we're grading them on a straight line. Not a lot of curves out there.
Yeah, they're just driving from, like, Vegas to Yuma. Which, by the way, somehow this television show made Yuma look 10 times better than Las Vegas.
They did. It was amazing. There's also some editing issues with this show that I've noticed. Like, we came back to an episode, and one guy is on his team alone because both of his other team members left. We're never told why. They have no footage of it to splice in. Any other show, this would be the highlight of the season.
It's normally on the Great Food Truck Race, it's three-person teams. One person drives the truck, and two people are in the car, which has the same wrapping on it. And then normally two of them are inside the truck cooking, and one of them is outside the food truck yelling at passersby, "Hey, come get some of our fritters," in a way that I've never seen anybody in an actual food truck do.
No, I've been to a lot of food trucks. We have food truck festivals here. Most of them don't have barkers.
Yeah, but in this case, we were just told real briefly at the beginning of the episode, one of these women had to go back and take care of her father. One of them had to go back and take care of business.
That's all we know.
And then they just didn't drain any drama out of it. In the episode after that, a woman got whanged on the head by the door
and knocked out and had to go to the hospital. And that was like in another show, we'd be seeing clips of that all season.
Yes.
Leading up to the horrible injury she might have. As it was, she's like, "I got hit in the head." And you see her taken to the hospital. You see a guy say, "Hope she's okay." And then in the next scene, she's back. "I'm back."
This show is so uninterested in wringing drama from stuff, which I appreciate.
I actually find that kind of charming.
But in the episode where there was only the one guy, there was, like, negative drama. Because everyone else has three people on their team. He has one. Of course he's going to lose.
You know, if you're going to have a barker on your food truck, you should have a carnival theme. You could be like a genuine freak show. You could sell pickled punks that are just pickles. Deep fried pickles, that would be a pickled punk. People like that.
I don't know. I was just going to say, if it's a carnival themed food truck, that would be great. A food truck that sells carnival food. Because all that stuff is designed to be basically deep fried anyway. Mm. If someone says, "Hey, there's a food truck across the street, you can get cotton candy, roasted corn, and elephant ears."
I'm there.
Now, as it happens, Rias's idea of carnival food is pierogies.
Well, what I'm thinking when I say carnival is a more polite way of saying freak show. So, like, I've got all kinds of, like, crazy two-headed monster-themed food.
Like what?
Like came up with pickled punks.
Okay, fair enough.
I got pickled punks. I got your, what do you got, your five-legged cow? That's five chicken legs and a steak.
And I'm getting this at a food truck.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, maybe it's five chicken wings and a hamburger.
Okay. Sure. Anyway, the teams all went to Las Vegas and didn't do very well. But when they went to Yuma, everybody had lines around the block. And all the drama was, what are we going to do? We ran out of food.
Well, also in Las Vegas, they were parked in front of a sign that said, giant breakfast buffet, $5.
Yeah.
Food in Las Vegas... Las Vegas has food at every price range already.
Yep.
And a food truck isn't in the hot sun is lesser than a all-you-can-eat buffet in an air-conditioned casino.
Whereas in Yuma, where, what else are you going to do?
Exactly. In Yuma, everybody's, oh my god, a food truck.
Yeah.
Finally.
But they really turned out for the food trucks in Yuma. We did see the mayor. He was wearing, I think, a blue t-shirt and cargo shorts. And he told all the trucks, sure, you can park over here. And then the police said, you can't actually park
over
there. Yeah,
then they were parked over there and they were doing great business. And the cops showed up and said, what are you doing here?
But the Great Food Truck Race is what it always is. People keep talking about social media, which just means Instagram.
Do you think the cops showed up because the other food trucks complained because they had to pay for their spaces in the thing?
No, I think this show just genuinely does a pretty bad job of scouting out locations for their trucks, at least this season.
Okay.
Some seasons, it's kind of gone the other way. Like, I have vague memories of everybody coming into town and immediately saying, I happen to know that there's a giant fair going on, and then they would rush over there and all be within a block of each other.
Right.
In this case, people are genuinely just parking wherever they feel like.
Yeah, some people were at a gas station out on the outskirts. There was some pretty terrible situations going on in the Vegas episode. Yep.
But what the people were down to, I would eat almost all of their food.
Yeah, the remaining food trucks are all delicious foods.
Yeah. And that is the Great Food Truck Race, which is... somehow still a show that happens.
I know. When I heard that it was on again, it seemed like some kind of bizarre Fortean phenomenon. Right. I'm like, you will never guess what is coming back to television.
What would you like to talk about now?
Well, there's a little show we've been watching on Netflix because regular TV is just not giving us enough weird reality shows.
Yep.
So we started watching this show called Nailed It.
It's hosted by Nicole Byer, who I know from appearances on podcasts, and I think she is very funny.
It is where a team is given a picture of something and instructions from Pinterest, although they don't say it, but that's where the Nailed It meme came from. And yes. They're given a little... they're given a full kitchen full of supplies. They're given...
look behind the camera. That pause there was because Dryas desperately wanted to say, supplies!
It was. It's so hard for me not to say that. It's my favorite joke in UHF. A film in which I am.
It's true.
In. A film that I'm in is what I meant to say.
She is.
So, yeah. So, they're given a kitchen full of ingredients. So, they have everything they need to make the craft. They're given a... they're allowed to look at what the finished project is supposed to look like, and then they are turned loose. They also have recipes and such.
And then it's basically Cake Wrecks the Show, where everybody fails horrendously. Except...
I don't know...
except, unlike... all right, sidebar, Cake Wrecks, I think your website is hilarious. I don't like when you put on good cakes.
I know, you have your Sunday sweets section... nobody wants to look at a good cake. Right. We just want to see hilarious failures.
And the closest they come to successes on Cake Wrecks is somebody who sort of does the right thing.
You mean on Making It?
On Making. And I mean Nailed It.
Nailed It. You're right. Making It is another craft show we'll be talking about in a minute. So the reason that I feel like there are things they're not telling us on Nailed It. Like, maybe they're not... I know they have a time limit... but it seems like a lot of the time the cakes are not baked. And I don't know if that's because they're super slow mixing them or because they don't look to, they don't set a timer on the oven. I mean, how hard is it to poke a little skewer in there and see if it comes out covered in liquid?
Oh, you, I don't think you can blame the show for this stuff. Like, if somebody has to make five cakes because they're going to stack them up and make a top hat or something, and the first cake that comes out is completely uncooked, it's not on the show if the person then takes the other four cakes out and they're also uncooked.
Yeah, somebody did that. They're like, they tried to empty their cake out of the pan and what poured out was liquid.
Yep.
And so they took the other cakes out.
More liquid. And then they just kind of poured it all into a Bundt pan or something.
They poured it into a Bundt pan, they mixed it up, and they put some whipped cream on it. It was gross.
But what's fun is the judges are nice about it.
Right, the judges know that this is going to be a shit show.
Yeah, then they have the guest, that one of the guest judges was the guy from Sweet Genius.
Who's a hilarious eccentric. Yep.
Another guest judge was John Gabris, who is a maniac.
Oh, who's he?
He is a improv guy who's on a bunch of podcasts. I don't think you've seen that episode.
Probably not.
But they had a punter who was also really good.
A football guy who seemed to have a good... All the judges have a good sense of humor.
Everybody's having fun on this show, even when they do a bad job. And I like
possibly
that.
More when they do a bad job.
Yeah.
The contestants freak out about things. And honestly, I think... And I have no baking skills, but I think I could do a slightly... Oh, never mind.
Well, that's what this show is for, right? Like,
they try to get people with no skills to come in and do it.
I mean...
Because if you got, like, Cake Boss on there...
Watching the Great British Bake Off is fun, but I can't identify with that. These people are wizards and sorcerers.
It's true.
But if I watch Nailed It, I can be like, oh, I could be on this show.
Uh-huh.
Or...
remember that birthday cake I made you that time?
Well,
it was so sad.
To be fair, she used a very complicated octopus-shaped mold.
No, it wasn't the octopus one. It was the one that was supposed to be a flat cake, and
the corner
of it got eaten before you got home. And then I tried to write Happy Birthday, Monty, but I ran out of space, so I just wrote Happy Monty. And then when you came home, I presented it. Ta-da!
And I ate it, and I was a happy Monty, because, hey, it's still cake.
Yeah, but...
That's the moment in these shows where the judges have looked dubiously at what the bakers have presented, and they say, well, maybe it tastes good.
Yes, because apparently how it tastes is also part of the contest.
Yeah.
Although that seems... That's the smaller part of the score, but maybe if you make something that collapses and it tastes great... And everybody else makes something that collapses and tastes like poop.
Yeah. Transitioning over to Making It, which is a different show from Nailed It.
Making It, all of the contestants are really good at crafts in the first place.
Yeah, that's what's really setting this apart for me from, like, Craft Corner Deathmatch or Craft Wars.
Yeah.
Because Craft Wars, I felt like, I mean, I know how a hot glue gun works. I can do this.
All right.
You doubt my ability to do something? Remember, Craft Wars
I'm very increasingly distrustful of my hot glue gun, and I've begun to refer to hot glue as crafting napalm.
Hot glue, I have been informed repeatedly, is hot.
Mm-hmm.
But this show, which is Making It, everybody's very high-end, and even the losers have done an incredible job.
Yeah. Yes, it's hard to judge because sometimes on Making It, everything is incredibly good.
I feel like what people are being sent home is just their general concept or their vision.
Right. Like that one lady that got in trouble because her stuff wasn't creative enough.
Yeah. But like,
not creative enough, but not surreal or weird enough.
Right.
It was...
But everyone's like delivering on their concept really well and everything's really finished.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, eventually you say, well, I didn't like this thing that's just a whole bunch of eggs.
Right. There was someone that got sent home on the challenge. The challenge was you get a front porch and you have to decorate it for a holiday. His holiday was Easter, and he got a bunch of pastel-colored eggs and strung them and hung them up. But the pastel colors didn't show on the camera. They were super light, so they all looked like white eggs with an occasional colored egg.
Yeah, he claimed that around Easter you get dark red eggs, which you don't. And then he also said that he was basing his look on the goose that laid the golden egg, which has nothing to do with Easter. And basically, right. It was only egg-themed and not Easter-themed.
Right, right. So his front porch had lovely baskets of eggs hanging all over it, and it had a goose that was sitting on a basket of golden eggs. And it looked like if you had a grandma, and she was one of those ladies who lives maybe out in the country, or it lives in the city but idolizes people who want a country, and she wanted to do a little faux country theme on the outside of her house, that's what she would do.
Yeah. And the neighborhood would say, oh, that's that egg house. Look how impressive it is.
Yeah, it's gorgeously done, but it's not impressive.
Whereas the winning house was Valentine-themed and had a bunch of cool Valentine stuff.
And it had a box of fake chocolates hung on the door that had hands reaching out of it.
The hands were
holding cards. It was really cool.
Yeah, the hands were like those wooden artist hands that you can bend around. But it didn't have anything to do with Valentine's Day, but it looked so cool that I wanted to just do that.
Well, they were holding Valentine cards in them.
Well, that's the thing. I kind of like the idea of just having a bunch of those around the house to make it look like Cocteau's Beauty and the Beast, and then you change what they're holding to match the...
Sure, if you get mad, you can just stick up the middle finger.
Yes, and...
when you come home and all the middle fingers are up, you know someone's had a bad day.
Or they were just bored and gave in to the incredible temptation.
Yeah, it would be hard not to do that, wouldn't it?
Would you like to talk about this weird web show?
I guess so. You seem to like that weird web show more than I do, but let's talk about it.
All right. The show I'm talking about is Camp Wanakiki. And it's basically drag queens at a summer camp. And if you take RuPaul's Drag Race as the center point of a timeline, and way off to the gross direction is Dragula. If you go that far in the exact opposite direction of Dragula, you get Camp Wanakiki. It's wholesome, I want to say.
I wouldn't call it wholesome. And I wouldn't put it that far from Dragula. Because although it is not a show where drag queens try to gross you out, the drag queens are kind of look like horror drag queens.
Yeah, I mean, officially they're comedy queens.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
The premise is basically a cheap pun on the word camp.
Right. And
which I appreciate.
One of the things that the show really goes out of its way to do is to talk about how it's not about people tearing each other down. It's about people building each other up. And I love that because so much of what Drag Race is edited for is the bitchiness.
Yeah. But having said that, Camp Wanakiki, in its first episode, charmed me with its amateurishness. In its second episode, kind of annoyed me with it.
Yeah. It kind of annoyed me with its amateurness in the first episode.
They have two hosts, one of whom may have just gotten her lines a few minutes ago. Everything is one take. There's no... I don't want to dump on this show, so I'm just going to...
He does... It's...
I find its existence charming. I find watching it kind of annoying.
Yes, I like the show. I like what the show stands for, but I feel like its production values are lacking.
Yeah.
Like,
in the second episode, there was an archery challenge in which everybody had to shoot an arrow at a target. Three arrows at a target. We saw every one of those arrows with no editing to build up the drama, nothing on screen to let you know who was winning.
Nope. It was like being at a night in a bar.
Yeah. So that was annoying as a watcher. But what I liked was that they were so committed to the casual atmosphere, is they didn't even decide who was going next. Just the person who was running said, who's next? And somebody would go, I guess I am. That's fun. I don't know.
They have a nightly at the end of the show after they've competed in all their sports challenges or whatever they're doing, crafting challenges. They have a runway walk, which is called the talent show. Very well in keeping with the summer camp theme, I thought.
Sometimes it is a lip sync to an entire song that goes on too long, and people don't really have dances, so you get to see their looks really strongly.
And you get the feeling that these are not people who are good at performing in well-lit rooms.
In brightly lit, literal summer camp lodges.
Yeah, it's not even the lodge, it's like just a tiny room that they have to, their runway. Well, although a lot of bars are like that, so I'm going to give that a...
Yeah, I like how weird the show is. I like that it exists. I think it's interesting that whoever gets through a week gets a patch, which is both in theme with summer camp and also is kind of the same thing that Making It is doing.
Yeah, you get a patch on Making It, too.
Making It gives the winner of each challenge a patch to put on their apron, which is cool because by the end of the season, you'll have a visual shorthand for who's been doing the best.
You can just look at them and say, oh, the guy's got three patches. Yeah.
We may or may not continue watching Camp Wanakiki, but I like that it's out there.
As long as we're talking about camps, what about that crazy episode of Forged in Fire?
Which one was that?
The one where, at the beginning of the episode, they are driven out to a campground where there are some hand crank coal forges set up, and they're told to harvest their metal from the camping things that are around.
Forged in Fire really likes making people use coal forges that you have to hand crank.
It's a little sadistic.
And people may or may not know how to use them.
So on this episode, there were a lot of things you could use to make a knife out of. You could cut up this 50-gallon drum type thing that they were using for a fire pit. You could use a tent peg, but you had to use two kinds of metal. There were pitchforks lying around you could cut up.
What you had to do was make a sanmai, which we have learned means you basically have the soft metal on the outside and the more hardenable steel in the middle. So that way the soft metal is a stronger spine. Rias is looking confused.
I thought the soft metal was in the middle and the hard metal was on the outside.
The hard metal has to be in the middle so it can be the edge. That's the sharp
edge. Oh, you're
right,
because you sand you grind everything off so that the hard metal is showing, but you have a soft metal spine to absorb shock.
Yes.
Look how much we have learned. So anyway,
and it's very difficult because you have to forge weld metal together.
Right. Not only do you have to forge weld metal together, but when you are doing forging and you're outside in the bright sunlight, you can't actually see what color the metal is. And not being able to see how orange, yellow, or red your metal is prevents you from knowing when you should quench it. Is it hot enough? If it's not, bad things will happen. And is it too hot? Nope, can't do that.
Watching this show, it is constantly surprising to me that humanity got out of the Bronze Age. These are allegedly skilled forgers, skilled knife makers, with all the knowledge of the 21st century. And half the time,
they do not make successful weapons.
Yeah, their knives break or don't get hard. And then you look at history and you're...
I know, these are people who have... They've got gas forges. They got power hammers, some of them.
How did the English army have all those awesome broadswords and suits of armor?
Yeah, when they're cooking them over a pile of rocks with some dude operating a bellows to heat them up.
Good work, antiquity. You guys did a great job.
It is surprising.
In the most recent episode we watched...
We're not done with that episode.
Sorry.
That's the first episode where no one has turned in a working knife at the end of the first round.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody. The knives were all over the place. Some of them had big cracks and inclusions. Some of them weren't on center. Some were just terrible.
Yeah. Like, you should not be able to see a giant seam on the back of the spine of
the
knife.
No, where it has not forge welded. So that was interesting because I've never seen one where everybody failed.
Yeah.
That was my favorite part of that show. It's like, who's going to win this? Who's going to go home? Because, honestly, any of them could have gone home, and it was a matter of, well, whose knife is least likely to explode when we hit it when we use it?
Yeah.
And so I like that.
That was one of the ones where they were using it on antlers, too, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, they're going to do an antler
check. That is, of all the things they test their knives against, antlers are the hardest and most unfair, in my opinion. Like, bone is one thing, but antlers are designed for being out in the open and whacking into animals. Now, this most recent episode, which we just watched, had one of the most unsatisfying endings I have seen. The two final people had made swords.
Mm-hmm.
First guy...
His sword was a dull. It would not cut.
It was too dull to cut into the animal, while the...
Which was a wild boar.
So they got two wild boars strung up. Person A's sword pretty much bounces off it. Person B's sword cuts it in half.
Right. Now, Person A's sword, the complaint was also it's very heavy and poorly balanced. Yes. Yeah.
So in the second part, they test the strength of the sword by whacking it into a huge block of ice. Really good ice, I want to say. You can see right through this thing. And when they test it, it's clearly hard to control. It bounces up and almost hits the guy who's using it in the face. He doesn't like swinging it around.
Nope. So then sword B, the god of sword B comes up. And
they say it's a pleasure to use. Light, like, perfectly
it's
balanced.
It's light, it's perfect. It cuts the boar nicely in half. Which is pretty gross, I might add. Perfectly balanced. Now it's time for the ice chop. And they chop the ice with it. And the counterbalance on the edge of the pommel falls off.
Just the shock of the vibration. And I think it should have won anyway. I know they're calling it a catastrophic failure, but it's still a sword. You still have a handle. You could still hit someone with it.
Yeah, I don't call that a catastrophic failure. Catastrophic failure is when the weapon breaks in half, or something happens, or it injures someone and cannot be used again.
But they disagreed, and the heavy sword that couldn't... That
was an undeserved win.
I'm not convinced it will keel.
I don't think it will. I mean, well, it might, because it weighs like 20 pounds.
It stabs pretty good. But, yeah. That was an unsatisfying finish.
Yes.
It reminds me a little of the first Claymore challenge.
Oh, geez.
The first Claymore challenge, I think they were hacking into pigs. And
Sorry about that.
The way I remember it is the first Claymore... They swing, and it bends around the pig.
Yeah.
Then the second Claymore, they swing, and it breaks in half.
Oh, yeah.
I remember that because...
I remember that challenge. But then I remember they got a good Claymore, and it cut through that pig like it was butter, and that was the most terrifying thing ever.
That was the second Claymore challenge, and oh my... After seeing the first failures, and one of the things about the show is I always thought steel was steel... I didn't know swords would just break like that.
Yeah, I didn't know that if you cook your steel too hot, it gets all granular and weak inside.
So it trained me. Now I'm like, oh, what's going to happen to this sword when it hits the pig?
Yeah, now it's something I'm interested in, as opposed to, of course, you're going to cut a pig in half. It's a sword.
So after having been trained that, to see in the second Claymore challenge, that just slices through it is yikes.
I knew metallurgy was a thing.
Yeah.
But it never occurred to me how important it is. So there was that. What else you got anything else?
I got nothing. I mean, I've been watching people play D&D on the internet.
That doesn't count as a reality show. That is patently a fantasy show.
I cannot argue with that.
I mean, it has swords and probably dragons.
I haven't seen a dragon yet.
Hmm. Well.
In fact, I'm going to say this. Most games of Dungeons & Dragons are shockingly low on both dragons and dungeons. Dungeon is not just a cave.
Mmm. Well, most of the caves you go into in Dungeons & Dragons aren't just caves. I mean, they've got 10-foot by 10-foot corridors in them that are lined with cut stone.
That doesn't make it a dungeon. That's just an underground
lair?
City
you
or
think it's
something.
A lair?
Has anybody been imprisoned in it? That's what a dungeon is.
All right.
All right.
I agree. I think maybe some of those things are lairs, and maybe you see more lizard people. So you'd be called lairs and lizard people, because lizard people might be a playable character class. Those dragonborn are.
To be perfectly honest, the name Tunnels and Trolls is more accurate than Dungeons and Dragons. Unfortunately, people would rather see a dragon than a troll. So, too bad for you, Flying Buffalo. That's who made the game Tunnels and Trolls. For people who are not up on your early RPG competitors to D&D.
Wow.
Okay, well, did you want to talk about something else? You've been watching some dogs?
No, I haven't really been watching much. I'm watching reruns of various shows about veterinarians. The Amazing Dr. Pole is just a show to watch if you want to see a calf dragged out of a cow with a winch. That's all he does all day, every day.
Where did the cow get a winch?
Exactly. Then there's Exotic Animal ER, which is good because sometimes you get animals people absolutely should not have in their houses.
Right.
Like, you can't have a pet lemur. That's terrible for both you and the lemur.
But he's ring-tailed.
He was pretty cute. But, yeah. So I like to watch that show. It's filmed in Florida, where I think they have no exotic animal laws, but they certainly should.
Yeah, anybody can open a gator farm.
Well, gators aren't exotic in Florida. They're just the home crew.
That's a good point. Like, we think of kangaroos as exotic, but in Australia, they're just a nuisance.
It's true. And I heard that there are more Bengal tigers living in Texas than in their native territory.
Bengal.
Yes. All right. So, unless you want to hear us talk animal trivia for the rest of the night.
Did you know that koalas have the smallest brain to body size ratio?
It's true. And their brains are completely smooth and don't have bumps on them and are encased in mostly liquid. So it's like a walnut floating in a parfait glass.
There's just so little nutrients in a eucalyptus leaf, and it's mostly toxic. What idiots. Stupid koalas.
Stupid koalas. But they're so cute.
They're so cute. All right, that's it for us. Toast this Lex.
Toast this Lex.